This is the Creative Agency Podcast,
where we explore the strategies,
aspirations,
methods, and mistakes
behind growing and maintaining
a successful
creative agency.
Hi, folks. It's me, Chris Bolton. It has been an exhausting week at Murmur Creative. Growing an agency isn't always pie and ice cream, no matter what they tell you. Sometimes it can be just a little bit soul-crushing. And transitioning from creative to business leader, well, that's tough. But when your soul isn't getting crushed, it's actually pretty fun and exciting. And I'm still excited about it, and I'm glad to have you guys along for the ride. I have Rachel Zimmer on the show today, co-founder of FiveCrowd, a unique agency that uses a vetted network of freelancers to accomplish creative work for Fortune 500 companies. Rachel and her co-founder, Bram Warshawski, both worked at Johnson & Johnson out of college and not long after founded FiveCrowd while they were both still in their 20s. You know what I was doing in my 20s? Not starting an agency that caters to Fortune 500 companies, I'll tell you that much. This episode is sponsored by my favorite content organization tool, Gather Content. Gather Content is a tool that allows you to collect all the copy and files and images for a website project in one place and then collaborate with your clients and coworkers in a super easy to use interface. The way we use Gather Content is right after we finish creating a sitemap and the first round of wireframes for a website project, we build out all the pages in Gather Content, creating and labeling text boxes so that our clients know exactly what content they need and how much and where it should go. Gather Content also allows you to export content directly to a CMS like WordPress, Drupal, Sitecore, and many more. You can get a free 30-day trial if you go to gathercontent.com/CAP. CAP standing for Creative Agency Podcast. So you should check it out if you haven't used it. It's a great tool. Let's get to the show. Hello all, today I'm joined by Rachel Zimmer, co-founder of FiveCrowd, a unique agency that uses a vetted network of freelancers to get creative work done. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Thank you, happy to be here.
So where are you calling in from, by the way?
Lovely downtown Toronto.
Excellent, excellent. So we're going to talk about hiring freelancers for remote work, the Orbital Framework, which is a system outlined in the ebook you guys released. And I'm going to start out by just getting to know a little bit of background about you. So my first question would be, how did you get into agency work?
So I actually started on the client side. I worked as a brand marketer for a number of years at Johnson & Johnson, managing brands like Tylenol and Aveeno. And during my time, it was clear that the ad industry was changing. And that's no secret, right? Like the 1960s Mad Men era has, you know, especially over the last 10 years, become quite antiquated with the rise of proliferated media consumption, the freelancer revolution, and on-demand economy. So my first foray into the creative side was actually on the client side. And then having lived and felt the pain on the client side, realized that there needed to be a smarter, better way to get work done, which was really the genesis behind FiveCrowd.
Yeah, that's cool. So how did FiveCrowd come about?
So it really was during my time as a client. I loved working with the big creative agencies, you know, my agency of records for the big idea and the creative and strategy. But when it came to the long tail of production, you know, there were more efficient ways to get things done. You know, not too long prior, you know, I was scrappy myself and using iMovie and Photoshop. And when things could take several weeks and quotes were coming in at really high rates for what felt like really simple, you know, resizing things or cutting down videos, that was really when the light bulb went off that for this long tail of production, there's a smarter way to get it done, which is just leveraging talent directly, so a designer or a videographer to get that specific job done and then bring that to ladder back up to the total idea.
How would you describe FiveCrowd to anyone, basically?
Yeah. So the first thing I usually ask is that familiarity with the agency world. So, you know, knowing that the Mad Men era is behind us in some ways, we've really taken advantage of that on-demand economy, and we have a digital platform where we connect freelancers that we vetted that are highly professional with big brands like Labatt, Hershey's, you know, large telcos, so that they get access directly to that talent.
That's cool. And so this software platform is something that you guys built yourself?
Yeah, that's right. It's been a long time in the making. So we were started in 2014. I'm one of the co-founders, and it's been a long time being built. And what's pretty amazing is that we do have a small service business that we use to access the crowd. And that's almost like our incubator lab to build the software as well. So the long-term vision is to potentially license the platform so other people can get access to the software that we use, as well as our potential freelance network.
Cool. And I'm sure some of our listeners are probably familiar with, you know, services like Upwork, where you can hire freelancers from all over the world. But you guys have just a slightly different model where you're actually vetting the freelancers yourself.
That's right.
Correct?
That's correct.
How many freelancers are in your network?
It's a great question. And the business actually started because we tried going direct to freelancers on platforms like Upwork or what used to be Elance Odesk. And what's amazing about those platforms is that you can access talent globally very quickly and in a cost-effective way. The thing that's less great about those platforms is that there's 10 million people on them, you know, how do you know if someone's good? The average rating's 4.8 out of 5 on some of those platforms. So, you know, the ratings aren't necessarily effective. There's so many people on there and so on. And that was really what motivated us from, the client side to create a vetted network. And then from the freelancer side, you know, there's so many people bidding on jobs. It's a race to the bottom by way of price. And so it's also not the best experience from that freelancer's perspective. So bringing it back to your question, we've been really focused on building a quality vetted network. So we have freelancers in over 150 cities around the world, and we have a waiting list. Wow. In which, as our demand increases from our clients, we then bring in people from the waiting list so that they also get access to that work.
Oh, interesting. So do you have any sort of guarantee about the amount of work that like a freelancer in your network will get?
So the promise that we make when someone joins us is, you know, we're getting to know you, we're investing in you, and we expect the same from them. So even though it's a remote relationship, we view them as an extension of our team. So if you think about the contrast of that with an Upwork where there's 10 million people, it's a lot more about the numbers and just, you know, blasting that out. We are truly like a water cooler culture with the freelancers that we have. So, you know, it's a pretty tight and close-knit group. And I wouldn't say we have a guarantee per se, but that is the value proposition that we have and something that we measure quite closely from a KPI perspective.
So are people actually working like 40 hours a week on the regular for you guys? Or are they usually just sort of, FiveCrowd is sort of one of the places where they get work amongst lots of different places?
And I'd say the average freelancer in our crowd is a full-time professional freelancer. So it's someone that, you know, runs their own small business. They're an entrepreneur of one or perhaps two people. And really their goal is to have, you know, a good roster of clients that they keep the lights on, right? And so we, depending on who the freelancer is, we can be the majority of their work, where to your point, we could be doing, you know, a short-term contract where they have a set number of hours with us every week, or it's more ad hoc where we help cover the ebbs and flows. And really there's no shortage of work. FiveCrowd was recently acquired by a company called Southern Graphics, and there's only increasing hunger to have more and more really strong talent. So that ability to tap into that volume of hours would be quite wanted.
That's cool.
Yeah.
How do you find your freelancers that end up becoming part of your network?
The first and probably most common is word of mouth. So once a freelancer has joined our network, you know, our goal is to be the best kept secret online so that once people find out about us and they realize the value proposition and experience it with projects, that they can really benefit from it. So word of mouth is huge. Press has been fantastic. So when we were in Fast Company or on BNN, we've seen huge influxes there. And then the final piece is that we will also do targeted outbound reach outs where we scrape portfolios of high potential talent and actually invite them to join our network.
I think you mentioned earlier some of the clients that FiveCrowd works with. It sounded like some pretty notable companies.
Yeah, we work with, we're very fortunate. We've worked with over 100 brands to date. And that includes everything from the beer world, so Budweiser, to Microsoft, to Clorox, to Kellogg's, just to name a few. So there really is no shortage of great work within the platform.
I imagine that onboarding these clients, the all that stuff is sort of, that's handled by you guys.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So the proposition to our clients is through one single point of contact, you get access to the world's top talent. So for many of our clients, we actually have a dedicated Five Crowder sitting in their office. So you can say, hey, Rachel, you know, I've got this new project coming in. Can you help me get it up to speed and get it running? And then whoever that account person is would distill the brief. Once it's aligned to with the client, then it would go into the platform. So there is a level of vetting, if you will, on the client briefing side before it ever goes into the platform. And that's a piece of feedback that our freelancers have shared. They love our timelines. They're always consistent and tight and clear. And they really like that by the time they receive the brief, all of the assets are there, the specs are there. So it's a very clear ask instead of having to have piecemeal information coming at them.
Wow, that's fascinating. Actually having someone who's employed by you sitting in at the business sort of as part of their marketing team almost.
You got it.
That's just sort of indefinite when they contract with you guys. You basically are, well, here's your Five Crowd person.
More or less, I'd say the service level agreement that we have with different clients varies based on the volume and need. But that's essentially how it works.
What made you guys decide to do it that way?
So marketers are under increased pressure, right? They have to do more, create more content more often and across more channels. And since 2008, the pressure for marketing departments has been immense. The rise of procurement has come in. They have a much louder, you know, and stronger seat at the table. And so what's happening is marketing headcount is being reduced. And the unfortunate piece is marketers are doing more, not only with less budget, but also with less time. So part of our proposition to our clients is our goal is to be incredibly easy and simple for them to use. And, you know, after experimenting with a few different ways that they could brief in projects, it was unanimous and very overwhelming feedback that having a familiar face that you trust, that knows your business, that's there, that you can speak to, is by far the strong preference from the client.
Gotcha. No, it's really interesting. So you guys actually, you don't do strategy, correct? You're basically just focused on execution.
You got it.
And so my last interview, I interviewed a gentleman named Will Burns, who his creative agency is just based on the ideas, just based on the strategy. It doesn't do any execution. It's just coincidental that these two agencies that sort of do something very similar, but on different ends of the spectrum. I ended up talking to at the same time. He has a small network of freelancers that he pulls from as well that are basically just there to generate ideas and strategies for companies, and they hand it off to someone for execution. I'm curious, have you seen the Five Crowd model crop up anywhere else? Are there other agencies doing this?
So it's really interesting, right? When you share Will's experience in the agency that he's built. Because, if you think about physical production, so, you know, a building that you'd potentially build, you'd hire an architect to figure out, you know, what should my layout be and the blueprints and what should my structure look like? You know, what are the policies or regulations in this space that I need to be aware of? And then when it gets time to, once that's all determined and you're doing, you know, bricklaying and welding and plumbing, you would never use that same architect to do all of those specialized, very, you know, focused doing tasks. And so, you bring that physical production space of architect to construction worker into the agency space. It was always, it never sat well with me, and it was a bit confusing for why you'd have the same person in the agency space doing the creative thinking and strategy as well as doing the doing. It's, to hire the best tool for the job, and quite often the best people to be the doers are not necessarily the best people to be the thinkers and creatives and strategists. So, based on that, we were very choiceful and thoughtful to stay focused in pure play execution. So we're a high volume business. We're incredibly good at taking in a tight tactical ask, churning it out in the most efficient way possible. So we did explore the idea of doing the same kind of model with creative and strategy, but I think given the nature of high volume, quick turn, and the need to quickly ramp someone up on the job like Uber, it just would be incredibly difficult to do that. So
Yeah.
So bringing it back to your question of, you know, would, have we seen anyone do, you know, create the five crowd, if you will, in other areas? We actually haven't. I think it's so interesting that so many agencies, you know, they start off with one potential value proposition. They usually land to becoming full service in the end. You know, it's hard to turn down revenue from a customer. If they say, hey, can you take on this additional project? It's hard to turn that down. And I think one thing we've been laser focused in is staying within that executional space. So the final point I'll share on this is that we had one client early days ask us to relaunch a $250 million brand for them. And we were like, thank you. That's incredibly flattering. And what a fun project that would be. And, you know, our whole team is very strategic. So we would love that kind of meaty challenge. But at the end of the day, we said, you know, we think that's best fit for your creative agency partner. And, you know, if you don't have one, we're happy to refer you to some that we really trust and think highly of. And then once your idea is baked, we'd love to come in and amplify and create all the touch points thereafter. And I think that's one thing that our team has earned respect and trust with our clients on, as well as it's continued to enable us to be so good at our core value proposition.
Interesting. You know, a lot of our listeners are creative agency owners or aspiring creative agency owners. Is Five Crowd a threat to smaller agencies? Like, is it, do you think we're going to see, you know, more of this sort of crowdsourcing, you know, more freelance and less of the sort of agencies that do the creative and the work together?
Oh, it's so interesting. I think it depends on who your target market is. Which is a somewhat cop-out answer, but I think when I say that the target market, I think if you're thinking about global Fortune 500 brands, they're fundamentally changing the way they go to market. And now they have global teams that create global ideas, and then it's more about marketing implementation at a local level. And so I'd say that structure is inherently causing a threat to local partners because the need for local creativity is diminishing. Right? Because that global piece is so prevalent. What I would say is that there's, you know, call it the Fortune 1000 to Fortune 10,000, which are all good sized businesses that need marketing horsepower and strategic chops as well as execution. And I'd say for those guys, if I were running a small agency that was going after, you know, the long tail of, you know, medium sized businesses, that's really where I would focus because the full service proposition and, you know, everything that the core agency, you know, has been built upon would be incredibly effective there.
Gotcha. I imagine that you guys are less expensive than, you know, your average large agency that would provide these sort of services. What is your pricing like?
Yeah, so I think it's important to note that we have efficiencies because we have fewer people in head office. So we don't have a strategy department and production department and creative department. So our overhead is incredibly lean. And then our ability to connect and get talent going in that on-demand way is also an area where we drive efficiency. So our freelancers are still paid good, fair, equitable hourly wages. So the efficiencies are not coming from squeezing the freelancers, which is truly part of our social mission. So our pricing is very competitive. I'd say on average, we're 20 to 50% less than traditional creative agencies. And the variance is really driven by the project type or the, you know, the nature of the brief that you're working on. And how we do pricing is on a project or scope based project. So we don't do an hourly billable for our clients. We take in the brief and we go back to them with the project price.
Seems like pricing projects must be kind of difficult when you have all of these freelancers, I mean, hundreds of freelancers, and you don't really know like how quickly they can do things, or maybe you do, I don't know.
So on every single project, we conduct a rapid RFP. So if you, it's so analogous to Uber. So imagine you hit, you know, I need a driver. All the drivers in the area get notified. Someone says, yep, I'm going to take the ride. And then that driver would be notified to come to you, essentially. So our model is very similar. You know, we put the brief into the platform and then all of the applicable people for the job. So we usually shortlist about 3 to 5 freelancers. And whoever says, yep, I can take this on. I can take it on within the budget and within the timeline. They would then get awarded the job and they would be the one to fully deliver it.
Oh, so are they getting paid a flat fee basically as well?
That's right.
Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha. So it's not like they can run way over on hours and then you can lose money on the project.
No, but what I will say is that if the brief changes or, you know, the scope is clearly, you know, above and beyond what we initially talked about, we'll of course go back and have an honest conversation with the client about scope increases and so on. And I'd say most of our clients are very reasonable and understanding of that. So we do protect our freelancers in that way and try and take on the account management portion of the agency so that they can be focused on what they do best, which is, you know, designing or video editing or copywriting, and we can take care of the rest.
Is the account management overwhelming? How many people do you have sort of doing that?
Today we have 12 full-time, but so I briefly mentioned earlier, we were recently acquired by a global company called SGS or Southern Graphics, and they have over 3,000 employees around the world who are as of now starting to log into our platform and accessing the crowd as well.
Well, that is fascinating. So I do want to talk about remote work, of which you're very well informed of. What would you say that are the main benefits of remote work for agencies?
So I'll talk about both sides. So on the agency side, there's the financial management component. So having fixed overhead is really hard as a management team or as a leader, because you have to make sure that your projects are coming in at the pace of what the fixed capacity is that you've staffed for. And that's a very difficult thing to do, right? To match that supply and that demand. So the benefit of remote work is you're staffing just in time so that you hire someone when you need them instead of just in case you'll need them. So first off, the financial management piece, I think, is huge. The second major benefit to an agency is that you get access to a world of talent, quite literally. The internet is amazing, right? Every time I hear someone say that, I'm like, yes, it's so awesome, because you can, you know, through the click of a button, I mean, how we're speaking now, you can do video conferencing, you can share screens and review a deliverable together. So it's so easy to collaborate globally and remotely that, you know, you get access to global talent, and that could be niche skill sets, that could be, you know, based on someone that has very, you know, niche experience that you're looking for. So you get access to talent that you wouldn't normally get access to. And I'd say those are really the two key reasons.
Do you think that agencies that use remote workers have an advantage over agencies that don't?
Yes. For the two reasons I just shared, I think the financial benefits of managing from a remote work perspective and from a talent access perspective far outweigh the benefits of a pure play full-time base.
We have, at my agency, Murmur Creative, we have one remote worker, and we find ourselves always wishing he was here, but maybe that's just because we like him.
And I think it's about the culture you create, right? Like our team, we've created a remote culture. So our freelancers, you know, we've got stickers for our team, and our freelancers are part of some of our inside jokes. We do freelancer newsletters where we showcase, you know, great people in the month. So I think it's about being really thoughtful about how do you take an internal culture where there's such immense amount of trust and personal relationships built, and be very thoughtful and choiceful to do that in a much broader way around the world.
And does Fivecrowd have a central office?
We do. We're based in Toronto, Canada.
So there are some people that go clock in and walk into work every day at Fivecrowd.
That's right. And it's predominantly, in fact, it's exclusively account folks. So those people that I shared that go on site with clients, and the clients, again, really value that face time. And then the second piece is software developers for our platform. But we have no creative or production folks on staff. That's purely freelance.
What do you think are some of the advantages? I mean, what, you know, you have all these freelancers on your platform. What do you think they're getting out of the deal?
Oh my gosh. I honestly, as I'm watching all of the freelancers that we started working with, you know, their lifestyles evolve, I truly aspire to do a lot of the work that these folks are doing. You can check out on our website, we have something called the Freelancer Spotlight video series. And basically what we've done is filmed a day in the life of a lot of these individuals. So you can see, you know, Veronique, who lives in Pensacola, Florida, and she, you know, has one son, and she'll go running in the morning, take him to school, pick the projects that she wants to work on them from home, go pick her son up, make him dinner, continue doing some of that work. And, you know, her background is she used to be a creative director at a large agency in Texas, decided to make the move to more rural Florida, has the lifestyle that she's looking for, a lower cost of living because of based of where she's based. And then she has the relationships in the network to bring that work in. So she can pick the project she wants to do. And the number one thing really I'd say for her is flexibility, which is a key thread that we hear across all of our freelance base.
So let's talk a little bit about the Orbital framework. That's an ebook that you guys produced. What was the purpose of the Orbital framework? How did it come about?
Well, we were starting to be asked to speak at a lot of different conferences, from technology to the freelancer base to the on-demand economy. And what we quickly realized is that everyone likes the idea of remote collaboration and remote work, but it's still a hard thing to wrap your head around, especially if you're used to having, you know, 20, 50, 100 people in a traditional shop. So what we thought we would do is just share some of the learnings and best practices that we've had running a global tight-knit group that's been able to produce thousands of projects together for big brands successfully. So that was really the impetus behind it.
Nice. So the Orbital framework as drawn in your book is basically like a triangle inside of a circle. And the triangle represents, or the three corners are responsiveness, clarity, and empathy. And that's sort of the communication aspect, correct?
That's right.
And then there's these six words that are orbiting around the triangle that are skills, tools, spaces, resources, channels, and process. So how does that all work together?
So to chat a little bit about the Orbital framework, I'd say there's a few key principles in which can really power a remote relationship. The first is, unfortunately, when you're working with someone remotely, it's incredibly easy to, especially if you don't have a long-standing relationship, to just shut your computer, leave, and go to the bar. Right? In theory, there isn't that long-standing trust and history there. So there's quick things that need to be done to quickly build that trust. And responsiveness is one of those things that you're very quickly demonstrating, that when you reach out with a question or, you know, once that first communication has been expressed or built, that high level of responsiveness is something that leads to that trust, which makes a massive, massive difference. The second piece is clarity. And, you know, the hardest thing with remote collaboration, unlike when you're face to face with someone where you can read body language or point to a visual, you need to be incredibly clear and detailed with what your ask is, or, you know, what the direction is that you're giving. So that's really the second piece, that you need to be incredibly thoughtful and disciplined with that. The final is empathy and having that benefit of the doubt for someone. So recognizing that they may have a ton of other projects on the go, or recognizing that, you know, if they're not responding, but they usually respond 10 out of 10 times, maybe they had a personal emergency, and how do you get in their shoes and understand what's going on in their world. So really those three principles of responsiveness, clarity, and empathy are things that have led and guided our team from a soft skills perspective that has really had a positive impact.
So those are things you're kind of evaluating potential freelancers on. How do you sort of determine that they, I mean, obviously responsiveness is pretty easy to measure. Clarity and empathy may be a little bit more difficult. I suppose clarity you can sort of get through communication and emails and stuff like that.
Well, I can share how we do it at first. I think there's one good example for how we live the Orbital framework. So when a freelancer applies to join our community, we ask for some basic information. So if you go to our site, www.fivecrowd.com/freelancers, you'll see a quick video explaining our process. You'll see you know, the application at the bottom where you have to put in your average hourly rate, your portfolio link, and so on. After that's done, someone reviews, you know, the freelancer's portfolio. And if it, you know, they look pretty good and that it could be a good fit, you know, there's a need for their skill set, we invite them to complete a pilot project. And this pilot project we pay a stipend for, so it's not a reflection of the individual's hourly rate. But what we look to do is, you know, and what we share is we're investing to get to know them. And we ask them to invest to get to know us by doing this project. And during that project, we go through a whole bunch of things. We get to see how responsive are they when we're asking questions or going into details on a project. You know, do they ask good questions at the beginning? Do they ask for clarification when they're, you know, sharing some designs? Do they share their perspective on it? You know, all those kinds of things we get to see come to life through this pilot project. And based on that, we usually have a pretty good determination as to whether or not they're going to be a fit within our community.
Gotcha. Okay, so you sort of described the three communication aspects that are in the triangle, and then can you talk a little bit about the words that are orbiting around the triangle and how they come into play?
Sure. So I think I can speak to, there's six of them, and I can dive into a few as examples. So skills is one, tools is another, spaces, resources, channels, and processes. So I'll start with processes as an example. So in our world, freelancers receive projects in a very consistent process every single time. So on every project, they would receive, a detailed brief with the project description, key deliverables, the timeline, and then the budget or the ask for their best estimate. And the way in which they engage is consistent every single time. So from a remote work perspective, there's, the first time when we're doing the pilot project, there's some kinks that need to be ironed out. But over time, that learning curve goes away because that process is so consistent. So there's a level of familiarity with FiveCrowd, with the team, with the process, based on that consistency every single time. On the flip side, before starting FiveCrowd, I spent some time shadowing the offshoring business in the technology sector in India. And, some early learnings there where, there's clients from all over the world sending information in 25 different ways. It's very, very, very difficult to ingest information, make sure that they're clear on the ask, and then be successful in delivering on it. So that process is so, so important to that clarity piece that we've already spoken about, and making sure that, it's easy to digest, consistent, and then clear from project to project. So that's processes. I'd say resources is the second one I'll touch on. From a remote perspective, it can sometimes be uncomfortable to say, hey, got another question. Oh, one more thing. And, whether that's on GChat or Skype, it's a bit different than if you're sitting side by side with someone and, you can see their facial expression and how they're engaging. So the best you can, A, communicate that, you're available and that's okay. I think that's kind of part A. But then part B is, how can you put the resources in place so that, the number of questions or the things that someone may have or need can be reduced or minimized, or they can do that independent learning. So for instance, I'll use another FiveCrowd example. We have templates for all of our deliverables. So when a freelancer is awarded a project, whether it's a PSD file or a PowerPoint file or a Word doc file, they don't need to ask, how should this be delivered? It's all there as within the platform and very clear how they need to be delivering it. And so I think the more of those resources can be put into place, perhaps a mentorship program where someone's there to help guide you through the process and so on, I think the higher the success of that individual. The second one I'll just share by way of resources, and this also crosses over a bit into tools. One of my favorite things with Airbnb is a principle they have with hosting. So what they've learned is that they're very successful acquiring new hosts when another host has referred them onto the platform. And so that's their number one source. It's also actually Uber's number one source of drivers from driver referrals. And so for both Uber and Airbnb, what they have found is that when they hit a certain threshold, so for Airbnb it's 3, after someone has hosted for 3 times, they're now hooked and going to use the platform. So similarly for us, we have a metric that is exactly that, where we see the number of projects that a freelancer has successfully completed. And after they've done that, we know that they're flying. They're going to be like a long time, high value freelancer and a strong member of our team. And so the tools and resources and metrics around that, I think, are really important to be able to drive that success and empower the people that you're working with. So hopefully that brings some color to the different examples and ways that the Orbital framework can really power and support a remote team.
Gotcha. Yeah, well, everyone should check it out. It's available at fivecrowd.com/ebooks, and you can get your free copy. One question I was just thinking of for you is, how do you sort of ensure the quality of the work?
It's a great question. So to our clients, we make that not their problem. So because you have a single point of contact, which is FiveCrowd, we worry about quality from project to project. However, under the hood or behind the scenes, if you will, there's really a couple of key drivers. One is that because we run that pilot project and have such a thorough vetting and curation process, we really know that we're working with strong talent by the time they're working on a live client project. So in the same way mm-hmm. that, you know, at an in-house agency where all of your staff is full time, you know, someone who's trusted and vetted is going to be there completing the job. There's still a layer of quality control before anything goes back to the client. And that's consistent in our world where that account person would review the deliverable and make sure that they're happy with it before it ever lands on the client's email.
Cool. Well, that's such a fascinating business model. And it is, you know, you're mentioning Uber and some of these sharing economy companies and sort of thinking of that as sort of a model for a new kind of agency that involves not necessarily crowdsourcing, but expert sourcing. Have you guys had, I mean, you say you mainly work with Fortune 500 companies. Do any agencies use you?
So Uber's a client, funny enough. No, we've been very thoughtful and choiceful to only go direct to client. However, our new parent company, SGS, we will be powering and have been beginning to power their 3,000-person organization. So not only will we be going direct to clients through our service model, we'll also be doing, powering the organization from the other end.
And have you worked with, smaller businesses? Or does that not usually work out with your business model?
We do really try and stay focused on, I'll call it, the big brands where there's a strong partner for the creative and strategic ideation. And the small to medium-sized businesses, our experience has been they're phenomenal and fun and caring people who are, you know, often have really strong, high-growth businesses. But really, they do need a full-service agency. And to be true and core to our value proposition, we really don't want to stretch into that space because we know that it will dilute the effectiveness and efficiencies that we've been able to create on the production side. So really, we're staying focused there. And because of that, I don't think the smaller businesses are, you know, that we're the best fit for them and that they're the best fit for us.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, thanks again for joining me, Rachel. I always ask my guests at the end of the show if you could offer a few bits of advice for growing agencies who are trying to position themselves in a competitive market. Anything about, hiring remote workers or, growing an agency that you might be able to share with us.
Sure. I'll share three pieces of advice that I think have worked out quite well for us. The first is embrace technology. So, you know, when someone joined us from a large global agency, he went, "Holy crap, you guys have automated a good portion of my previous world." And I think it's just a testament to 2017 that there's so many automation tools and ways that you can build a really smart agency instead of hiring, you know, an administrative person for that or, you know, a project manager to do this. So really embrace technology and think about how can you use it to enable and power the smart people on your team and set it up accordingly. So technology would be the first. The second would be embrace remote work. It's happening. It's here. It's growing and top talent is choosing to, you know, go the freelance route. And so to get access to the global network of really top talent, as well as to have flexibility from a financial management perspective, you'll be remiss to not build that into your business model. So technology,
excellent.
Remote work, and then the final piece would just be true to your value proposition. Define it. So in our world, you know, execution is king, and that's really where we're staying core. And, you know, just know what yours is and make sure you stay true to it so that clients, when know to come to you, you know what you're not, and you really be building success based on that niche that you're carving out for yourself.
Excellent. Great advice. Well, thanks again for joining us. I think that everyone will be excited to hear about Five Crowd and about remote work. Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Great. Thanks so much for having me. I'm looking forward to continuing to listen to your great podcast.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Creative Agency Podcast with your host, Chris Bolton, who, when he's not podcasting or being a dad, he is the Digital Strategy Director at Murmur Creative in Portland, Oregon. Be sure to visit us online at creativeagencypodcast.com.